Thank you. the audit needed improvement in the poor outcomes. We identified really four areas that we believe resulted in these improvements and is something that could be duplicated also at other audit entities. The first one was the quarterly interactions that we as an office have with management, which leads to, in our opinion, a better understanding of the issues on the table. The second area that we also believe results in an improvement is the actions that were then subsequently taken by management. They would, after that, meet with the Office of the Auditor General, come up with commitments, with action plans, which would drive clean administration. The third area that we identified for this improved trend was the involvement of the minister. As we've seen, the minister is very experienced in, with the auditors. You may know that he was formerly the commissioner at the South African Revenue Services. So he's not at all intimidated by the auditors, and he has been very proactive in addressing the areas of all the audit entities in his portfolio. And the fourth area that we identified that was key in this process then is the filling of key vacancies. Filling with suitably qualified and competent staff members. However, and it's almost an however from the audit panel, we do believe, even after having considered this positive feature, that there are two areas that need attention and two areas that really led to some of the audit findings this year. The first one is just that key officials lack appropriate competencies, and the second one is that the leadership is not effective. If I can speak to the first one. As a national treasury, we found in the finance office that they had appointed two management accounts, one that dealt with financial information, the other one that dealt with performance information. But in our opinion, these two individuals came from the private sector. They were not yet familiar with the public sector accounts, and they were not as familiar with the reporting framework that the department adopted. So we suggested to management that these two should gain an improved understanding of the environment that they operate in. We also believe that is a requirement for the upskilling of the key officials to enable reliable monthly financial statements. We often find that when we arrive subsequent to the financial year end, it could be the first time really that management was informed to submit a comprehensive set of financial statements. And we believe that if they get into the habit of monthly financial reporting and doing it comprehensively, that we can avoid quite a number of the findings that we had this year. The public office is the very best list on the key location. On
Are they here?
Oh, thank you.
go to the risk area that needs to receive attention, we'll see that status A moved to a situation where four of those six areas require attention. And those four areas, it is the human resource management area, the information technology area, the quality of financial statements, and the quality of performance reports submitted. And all these four critical areas talk to what transpired, which led to some of the non-compliance findings which ended up in the audit report. And in terms of the financial health, we didn't pick up any significant matter that needed the attention of the committee as such. If we go to slide 7, you see that this graph just depicts the red circle indicates that there were material misstatements that were picked up, and due to the fact that status they were given the opportunity to adjust, they actually moved from being financially qualified to financially unqualified. So this just indicates that had there been no opportunity to management to correct the financial statement, status they would have been sitting with qualified credit opinion. When we move to slide 13, and slide 13 talks to the driver of key controls. And this is where we talk of issues of leadership, financial management, and the governance. And these are all the issues that actually drive the issues of financial reporting. Even though the audit outcomes improved compared to the prior year, there is a regression overall in terms of the leadership, the financial performance management, and the governance issues. And this is as a result of, when you look at the governance, one of the governance structures we look at in an internal audit. And the internal audit of the department had issues in that they never completed their planned audits on time, and the whole internal audit division didn't perform as required. And as a result of that, there were disciplinary action taken against some of the management in the internal investigation. And when we look at the issue of the leadership, there were issues that required a leadership or management to commit to issues around the mitigation plan, the plan that are put in place to address some of the prior audit findings. Well, we found out that similar issues that we reported were still creeping up without anyone being held accountable for their actions or for not doing the right thing that's supposed to be done. In the area of financial and performance management, which is the area that talks to the financial statements that are accurate and complete, there was also a slow response in terms of management addressing these areas of concern. Because if you look at the material adjustments that we're talking to in terms of the financial statement, those things we've reported for the past 3 years and they're not going away and the department is not moving. And there's no one who's actually held accountable in that regard. So the same thing happens over and over again and no one is taking accountability and no one is doing anything about it. Those are the key elements that actually led to the regression in terms of the key drivers of the internal controls. And now, when we move to the area of the commitment required, there were basically two issues that were top of the agenda. The first issue that was top of the agenda was that there needs to be enhanced performance management and consequence management. And when talking to these areas, we looked at the area of, over the past number of years, what is it that we're picking up as auditors? And what was done to the responsible officials where there were no improvements in their area, despite the fact that we've reported over a number of times? And is that reflective in their performance contracts or in the performance evaluation? And the commitment we required for the department was that these actually should form part
deal with the this document, the audit outcomes of finance portfolios. which is, I gather, for the entire finance family. So I think that this was distributed last time, but clearly we've just focused on National Treasury and SASC, which is fine. But when are we going to deal with the whole family as a group? This was distributed last week. The second thing is, I guess this is partly my fault for not bringing it, but these outcomes are much more useful if you've got a copy of the AG's report, which really brings it down from the abstract to the structure. So I don't know, I mean, it's partly because the meeting this morning went on long and I was disorganized, but it might be helpful if the AG, next time they come, could perhaps bring copies of the reports, respective reports. And I don't know if any of the members has been with us today. So that's just for the next meeting, Chair. Then I just took a look at my notes from the last time we considered the AG's reports in October last year we did it. I actually wrote down there that the number of findings in Treasury's AG's reports was zero in 2008, 4 in 2009, 6 in 2010, 8 in 2011. I don't know, I might have taken it down a little, but that doesn't tally with the findings on page 6. I don't know if you can help me with that, but I definitely had a note that said there were 8 findings in your report for National Treasury last year. I share my colleague's concern about the stagnant performance of material findings and the quality of submitted financial statements. I might have missed where you dealt with the minister's intervention there, but clearly he committed to make the intervention last year and we still have the same problem now. I don't know if you could just, if I didn't miss, just briefly recap what exactly is happening with the quality of submitted financial statements, because from our side, we would certainly expect National Treasury to be an excellent performer in that respect, given that they're holding the rest of government to account on the same thing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. What's important on the commitments required from the PCJs around the signing of the service risk level agreement? I want to find out from where you're sitting, how does that affect the quality of performance report or considering that this is the audit outcome that came out, however it is, this is what needs to be checked. And that's all, comfortability is part of it.
So you two are pretty focused.
Okay.
Okay.
training were they given and how often do they go to this training? So it was not an overall training to establish international trade against capacity to skills and competence. That exercise was not done, but it's just a request to the officials who were just busy with putting together the annual financial statements, including the disclosure notes. So it's limited to those who only in the process that they are involved in. The whole of the department, we don't have a concern in the department.
In the second issue, Chair, the issue of the leadership ineffectiveness. That's a term perhaps that's open to debate and discussion. Normally when we discuss the document with the faces, they call it the document with the faces, which is our dashboard document. When we pick up issues and we discuss it with management, we give management time to actually correct the errors that we picked up or put it to place the controls that are required to take care of the problems. And based on the response that management puts in place, based on the response time, to put it precisely, that's where we gauge whether the leadership is effective. And that would be, if the leadership is quick in their response, we normally rate the leadership as effective, and if they are slow in their response, we say the leadership is ineffective. That's how we actually rate it in terms of this, in terms of this dashboard. Now, in terms of the quarterly reports that are actually submitted to National Treasury, the problem is that most of the time, when you're submitting the quarterly reports, it's just like the monthly reports that are normally submitted. They do not contain all the disclosure notes that you normally do at the end. And when you submit those quarterly reports, fair enough, you'll have all the information required just for that specific submission of the quarterly report or that monthly report. But when it comes to year end, we're going to require additional information compared to what you normally submit, and that's now in the form of the disclosure notes, which is where we pick up a lot of these misstatements along the process. And it's a pity we didn't have some time to actually even go and discuss the whole finance portfolio, but it would have been clearer during that discussion that even in the portfolio, that's the trend that we're picking up, that most of the time, those errors on the misstatements normally okay in the area going just to the disclosure notes one, which is at the end. Moving forward, Chair, on the issue of the SLA impacting on the performance report, the SLA does not have a direct impact on the performance report, but the reason for the SLA is, if you check the CETA Act, it says for every procurement of a service that is required by the department at CETA, they have to sign a service level agreement on an annual basis, and the reason for that is to ensure that when there are amounts involved, when there is service delivery involved, the purpose of the SLA is to highlight the responsibilities of CETA and the responsibilities of the other departments, who should pay what at what time, who should take delivery of what and who owns what. That's just to regulate the relationship. Because if things go wrong and there is no contract or SLA in place, it's going to be difficult to hold each other accountable. That's the whole point. And in terms of the existence of the previous year action plans, we'd say there are action plans. National Treasury does follow that up. They get tabled at the audit committee. We sit in that audit committee. We evaluate whether there's progress made in the areas of addressing what we picked up. And as I have said earlier on, if you look at the number of findings we have, specifically in the year under review, they've reduced significantly compared to the prior year. And that's the result of those action plans that we actually talked to. And when we talk about the restatements of the financial statements, these restatements, I can assist us with that, but a lot of those adjustments, we call it material adjustment, relates to the areas where we go in, we audit, and we pick up what we call it errors. And once we pick up those errors, that's where now the non-compliance kicks in. And that non-compliance is section 41A of the PFMA that talks to the quality of financial statements that are submitted to the auditor. Because it says those financial statements need to be appropriate in line with that, the required framework. So once you start picking up those areas, and if they reach that materiality level where we say, you know what, management is material, now you have to adjust, then the non-compliance kicks in. That's the whole issue of the non-compliance. Then the views on the material misstatement, and I've just spoke to the views of material misstatement. precise number of findings of the previous year and that other year, I might not be sure, but the only thing that perhaps I can do is through the chair, I can submit, even if I submit the copies of the prior 3 years audit report. So that exercise, that can work. Because an audit report is a public document, I can do it through the chair. Thanks. I don't know whether there's any other question I'm not sure that I have.
Thank you.
quality of governance into the continent, they needed to look into that. There's one institution here that I thought is also critical. Oh, yeah. When Lendlend was in the intrinsic case, it was our director from the view to make sure it comes out of that. But I think, during the search, for some reason, now that they're not in the intensive care, they find it very, very appropriate to have their annual results released in public, not coming to Parliament. It's something that we need to correct. In fact, that we get invitation that the annual report of the land has been announced or is being unveiled. Without Parliament, they have insight of that information. They don't account the public, but they account here in Parliament. And I thought I should just make, and it's good that you if I catch up on the efficiency, just for reminder that within the finance limit, you've got this entity that remains accountable to Parliament when we are. In fact, some of them is direct. Direct accountability, unlike the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank is not necessarily accountable to Parliament, but from time to time, Parliament can call them to come and update us on a number of issues. And they've been very consistent in dealing and updating the committee in their way. So I thought I should just make a comment on this issue. But I still want to say to honorable members, you do find an opportunity to go through some of the annual report of this institution, do so, because it can only enhance the work of the committee and making sure that we seem to be doing our work at the end of the day. In the absence of any other question and comment, I think I should say, okay.
On that last point. In that last point of yours, I understand we have significant time constraints and it's not practical to see all of the entities, but it would be practical to get that presentation on the audit outcomes of the entity. We may not be able to delve into each of the annual reports in great detail, but it would be useful to see the overall trends. And actually, when that document was distributed last week, I thought that was a very useful week to have. So maybe if we have time, we could get that presentation.
We'll look into that. Time permission will be required to come back and give us presentation. Honourable members, thank you for the good work that you're doing to keep us on our toes, keep us informed. In fact, it is us who must answer your work. Because if you raise the issues that you observe year in and year out and nothing happens, blame it to Parliament. Don't blame it to the Senate. It is our responsibility to ensure that those things happen. But as I said, the ideal way of dealing with this is to get this report just on the eve of us receiving an annual report for any entity. And I think we should think of it as a union aside, just make sure that you remind the Secretariat that it is of no use of getting this presentation after. Thank you very much. Honorable members, thank you very much. You're going to take the last presentation. You are ready. Don't have an issue that you want to sleep in Cape Town. You're working in Pretoria.
Okay. Now that we are accepting workers to come to buy heritage. Can I propose that then we look at like section 4 of a proposal by Eric and Mrs. Carter? Because now we're going to be like, to me, it's more like there's not an assumption that we are, as a committee, are accepting what the honorable judge has proposed, changing what has been drafted earlier on in the draft.
Yeah, I think in our last discussion, we dealt with these issues, and Honorable Mahendra said this was two positions we made. And I said in the final answer, when looking at that, but not that that incorporates. So what you are bringing back is an incorporation of what the proposals were. They are very strong. Assess what I'm actually proposing. So I'm not suggesting that this is the, I don't think anyone's suggesting that this is the new draft of the bill, but it's certainly a version that incorporates what I'm suggesting. And that doesn't mean anything more than that. This is what it is.
as soon as I put proposals forward, they're somehow not allowed to appear in the text, not allowed to go on the screen, and we're not allowed to look at what they might do to the text. We have to revert to my memory. I'm suggesting that's double standard. That's not fair, and I deserve the same privilege as anybody else in this committee, as the secretary to this parliament, to have my proposal considered as part of the text. That is what they are.
We have not let it expand. We have not let advocate Genesis expand what you have been contributed. In case, and I'm still saying, it is important that you can discuss that we revert back to the original of your proposal in terms of that particular thing. But I don't think it should not be discussed. Advocate, let's move on.
Complicated.
financial management for the public finance management act provides how one must pass a vote, pass a vote with votes, and after all the votes are done, you pass the appropriation. Should you not be able to pass one of those votes because of this provision, can you pass the rest of the appropriation? I would think so, but it's not clear. Certainly the reserves have been quite good in giving advice on that. But I'm a bit concerned about that, Chairperson. I move on, Chairperson. The third proposal,
that's all on. Sir, I fully concur with the concern raised there to just hold Parliament in a transform solely for the establishment of an oversight committee that the entire country can't do or nothing. Because Parliament is the highest decision making body. But a small committee, because it has not said Parliament cannot work, no, I don't think that would go on.
Thank you, Chair. No, Chair, maybe I will need a further definition or a further understanding from Honourable Harris. What does he mean by oversight mechanism? Because I thought us, the committee, you know, legislators within the House, we are actually doing an oversight, and we are actually doing the mechanism. So what is this other oversight mechanism that needs to be established? If you can just give me a better understanding.
Well, Chair, let me start with answering that question. I don't know if the member has the original act in front of her, but Section 4 of the original act establishes an oversight mechanism, and it also says you should be on that oversight mechanism. The point of the oversight mechanism is it's a normal committee of parliament with the powers of a committee of parliament, and it's made up of ordinary members.
But what has been said in the principal act is exactly what I'm saying, that if you look at the definition of an oversight mechanism of the parliament, who is an oversight mechanism of the parliament?
The oversight mechanism of parliament, as I understand it, is a committee of MPs, ordinary MPs, that have oversight of various things in Parliament that are detailed under 4.1, including the annual report and the instructions issued by the executive authority and other aspects of Parliament. So it's what this does is it establishes MPs having oversight of Parliament for the first time. Well, in fact, I need to correct myself. It should have established that because this law was passed in 2009. So if this law was actually implemented, then in 2009 we would have had an oversight mechanism introduced, which would have been a committee of MPs with all the powers of a normal parliamentary committee that would have oversight of Parliament. The point of this proposal of mine is to say, since 2009, the political mechanism that our legal advisor refers to has not been sufficient to ensure that MPs are given oversight of Parliament through an oversight mechanism. Therefore, we need to put some trigger into this law to force the establishment of the Oath of South Africa. Otherwise, there's nothing to say that we can't, in 3 years' time or 4 years' time, come back and look at it again, and the oversight mechanism hasn't been established. So it's as simple as that. I think, as our legal advisor said, history just proves the fact that a political mechanism can work. We need a legislative mechanism to force the establishment of this.
I look at your hand, by the way.
Thank you, Chair. No, thank you, Honourable Harris, but I still strongly believe that what you have just said is just a recitation or the duplication of exactly what the Principal Act is saying. And the Parliament, if you're referring to a Parliament, you're not referring to any other entity, either than the entity which is being consists of the very same MPs which belongs to different committees, like the committee that you're in and the committee that is appropriate, which is appropriating, which form that part which you call an oversight mechanism.
Chair, I don't quite know what else to say. I think Honourable Dlamini, if I can maybe just approach her and show her the section that I'm talking about, the main purpose of this bill is to establish a new committee that is an oversight mechanism and maintains oversight of the financial management of Parliament. That's never been done. And that's what this bill we are considering is meant to do. My problem is, unless the bill forces it to happen, it's not going to happen, as it hasn't happened for the past 4 years. But I think if Honourable Dlamini is questioning the idea of an oversight mechanism, I mean, that's a very different point. I think I thought there was consensus from the committee that what this bill sets out to do, which is establish an oversight mechanism, is something that we all thought was a good idea.
No, Chair, what the Honourable Member is saying is correct to say. That needs to be done. But to say, to have a clause that says Parliament may not do anything without having a circumstance. What if anything happens that then that committee does not fit? We are going into elections. Then the country is held at ransom. No, to have that there. It's fine, it's a resolution that was long taken, but you cannot have now a clause that forces a Parliament to establish that, or failing which budget of Parliament will not be passed.
Julie?
Understanding it differently. I thought our responsibility when this came coming from the court was such we are supposed to listen to the national management of provincial legislation and look into the structure of when we speak about these things and so forth and so on. So that was our premise. The issue of now wanting to have an oversight mechanism over Parliament is something else other than that and finding opportunities to put it in the legislation that comes from. You've highlighted advocate the challenges therefore that have been there with regards to probably having an oversight and not be able to limit. However, that's not what we suggested. If the committee feels or rather honorable feels that look, we need to have an oversight at this stage, we cannot do it now. And that I think what we're sitting in once we've moved with the investigation, we've done what that was supposed to do with the investigation coming from the court, we're sitting now, we're supposed to be engaging only on the meeting around the provincial and financial management. Not to be very serious and to be very opportunistic and try to give or put some, what do you call this, an oversight mechanism over Parliament itself. Because it will also deal with our budgeting process if you were to do that. Because then for a month, we must start to speak about it. How you connect, how you do that, and so forth. So I think from what we've seen, you could consider it probably in the new financial year you can start to do those things. But in the main, according to the mandate you're supposed to do, there's nothing to do with doing an oversight committee over the mandate.
Before I take in other advocates, can you just walk us on this issue of the oversight? What was the original, not original, almost, because we were told that the national, I mean, the Secretary of Parliament in the House of Justice, that they were told to this particular matter. So that we are at one, whether we're debating about establishing an oversight mechanism, or it was about the conflict.
I'm sure that Advocate Jenkins can do what you asked him to do, but it's going to be enormously complex unless all of the members have the original act in front of them. And what I was going to suggest actually before you ask questions is we perhaps reconvene this meeting once everybody has that act in front of them, because what Advocate Jenkins will tell you now is that the original act, which this committee passed in 2009, has section 4 that establishes an oversight mechanism. The fact that it was never formally established or not is what I'm trying to tackle in this amendment. But my concern is that if the members don't have this in front of them, it's very difficult to proceed. So maybe we should all get copies of it and then do this next time, because otherwise it's a very abstract thing that we're trying to do here.
No, that's fine. I've noted what you're saying. I'm okay. We may pass this particular point and we can calculate and then we'll proceed. Let me just save on this one.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The submission from the Secretary and the presiding officers was the following, that when the Fourth Act was passed in 2009, at that time, Parliament was just implemented the new government structure, which created the Parliament's Oversight Authority. And the Parliament's Oversight Authority, not a committee of Parliament, not open to the public, would sit on that committee, as well as the chair, person of the ECFP, the deputy chairperson, the speaker and the deputy speaker. And the executive Parliament is a speaker member, the council. And that body, in effect, did some oversight functions and some functions related to programming, planning and budgeting. So what happened when this act was passed? The issue was explained to the Auditor General at the time. And yet we have not established the oversight mechanism because we have the Parliament Oversight Authority that's doing those functions. And what we want to do is align the functions of the Parliament Oversight Authority, EOA, with the oversight mechanism, incorporating to rationalize these government structures. Now, I cannot explain why it took so long, but this is where they are. That's the submission that was made to this committee in the written submission from the Secretary of Parliament, which was authorized by the presiding officers. That submission informs or authorizes the amendment that's proposed on the representation and membership of the oversight committee. And consequent to that, legal services were asked to put in that clause which we have there at the moment, which is still under consideration, just saying that it's not a given, to say that speaker, deputy speaker, chair, and permanent deputy may not participate. Or actually, we're saying any member may not participate when there's a conflict of interest. So this is all of this. Why are we dealing with the representation issue? Because as Honourable Lala has said, the main function of the review here is to give effect to that what we call the Limpopo court judgment. But the opportunity was also then used, and we've reported that to the court, to say that there is a rationalisation of the governance structure. So I think that's it.
Hello, why I asked one of the members of the team to speak on this particular issue. What we are doing, we are also taking into consideration the mission from the force, including the implementation of the government. Now, you have had some sort of an informal strategy or formal strategy that has been doing this particular movement. Now, in terms of this movement, in terms of the daily force that you to incorporate, but when you do so, you then define the power of the conscious of that's very, very important. Having said so, that then brings in the competition. I think this has been a sticky problem, competition of oversight authority. That has been a problem around that. It was not able to resolve that much. And I think it's one of the issues that I thought that's one of the issues to just bear in mind in terms of the things that were needed. Even if it was not agreed, but trying to bring together everything on the table around. But what Olawale Niang has raised is quite critical. Because he then thinks Parliament will not deliberate on the budget for 2019 if the oversight authority has been paid. Not the proposal for the mechanism. Oversight mechanism is not in place. That's what Olawale Niang has raised. And it's a fundamental. So I thought that we'll come back on these issues. Honorable Ross, and then Honorable Van Boyen, Eric, and then we'll see how we can try to Honorable Denkin, you seem to be deep in thought. In our country, so you're deep in thought.
Just a correction. Just a correction on my part. When I'm reading the provision saying, it won't affect the passing of the appropriation bill. It will only affect the passing of Parliament's budget. There's literally amendments proposed by National Treasury. Parliament will pass its budget from the lump sum that National Treasury has given to us. So what will happen with that Section 18 amendment will kick in and say that we cannot now appropriate Parliament's own programs before we've established that. But the effect of my comment will be my comment. But it's not, it doesn't affect the appropriation of
Parliament.
Budget of
Parliament.
May not be trumped, and that's what the people have said. Can you speak on this? Thanks, Jay. Just on the last point, did you not say that the House can suspend the rule? Can they even suspend this rule and pass the budget? Not only in terms of the appropriation. But we don't have a legal opinion in terms of the import that we can account. Or do we have, you are the legal opinion, you said perhaps you should, you know, get further legal advice.
Legal
opinion from the legal
opinion. He says it will be quite simple. If that happens, the Parliament can't talk.
Oh.
I can see the Deputy Parliament, I can see the Speaker and the Chair coming to us and saying they must be able to find a way. We can't get the joint rules to sit. Even if they do sit, we need to find out the rules. We need to get the House.
We need to get the House to approve the rules as the rules come into operation. Both Houses must approve the rules. If there's problems with that, until the House actually sits and approved by resolution, those joint rules, the oversight mechanism will not be able to be established. That is what I mean. So if we get to the point where there's logistical problems to get called, or logistical problems to meet, both for the Joint Rules Committee and the Houses, or even officials finalizing all the rules, the draft rules, I would, that's what I meant. Then we will at legal services get all these information.
another way to use emergency funds or can we not get around this? What does the provision mean? I just see the foundation for a crisis. And it's not just the elections that can come up. Any unforeseen event can come up. But the issue, I think, the establishment of the oversight, if I may go that direction. What the Auditor General has proposed, and that's included in the bill we spoke about last time, is to say that the oversight of Parliament's financial management may only be done by the oversight mechanism. Now that already speaks to the issue of the POA will not be able to do it. If the committee and the House accept those amendments, the POA cannot do that function. And the oversight mechanism must be established. I also want to say that the issue of oversight of public finance is a constitutional thing. Legal Services has written an opinion a while back that when it comes to oversight of Parliament's finance, like with any other public finance, it must be done in an open and transparent manner. And doing it through the POA is problematic because the public does not have access. Yes, it is open and transparent because we publish our annual report and we publish the Auditor General publishes the U.S. audit report. But the issue is an oversight mechanism there, and the amendment of the Auditor General, the writing is on the wall, if I can put it like that, for the political mechanism. The political mechanism has to give effect, and it's a constitutional obligation to say, open up Parliament's oversight of its own finance. Has to happen. So, for me, the issue is the problem with this provision I highlighted from the chairperson and committee members is that it could cause a crisis, and there's no clutch, there's no valve to allow us to get out of that in a smooth way, should it happen. But I think the purpose is establishment of the oversight mechanism. If one can actually ensure that that happens, then of course the whole debate is.
Yeah, I wanted to get Kevin. I think he's coming to my point, that we can move on with the establishment of the oversight mechanism. But then the issue of the composition, I think this is what we need to realize on. So if that's the case, Chair, then we can start that deliberation. So as we are able to move out of this meeting issue.
My proposal is very simple, that we leave Section 4
exactly as it is. In 2009, this committee thought it was appropriate for an oversight mechanism to be established in accordance with the Joint Rules of Parliament, to consist of ordinary members, but not to consist, or rather to exclude the members of the executive authority, the deputy speaker, the deputy chairperson. This committee in 2009 said it's not appropriate for the people that run this institution to be part of the oversight mechanism that does oversight of them. That it's conflict of interest. The point is that was a good decision in 2009, and we must leave it as it is. The secretary comes out now and said that he wants to remove that restriction. He effectively wants the executive authority to sit on the oversight mechanism, and I'm saying to this committee that we should not agree to his request. We should leave it exactly as we wrote it in 2009. It's a strong composition. It leaves the oversight of Parliament to the MPs and doesn't allow the people who are being overseen to sit on the oversight. So my first proposal is we leave Section 4 entirely as it is, and I hope the members of the committee agree with me, because it gives us real power.
As Honourable Harris puts across a concluding argument, and I think the whole city is telling that it's not, I think it's between the right that look, we don't want the same people who must be done in what we call it oversight and gender based on the very case. I'm still speaking to what one said when we started, that just look into the mandate that we're given, and I think we're going to be completed that mandate in terms of the court judgment. I'm still speaking by the chair. Secondary to that, now we're finding ourselves looking at the other amendments, because if that's the case, Chairperson, we want to look into amendments of the legislation, then you must go all of the legislation into the committee. It cannot be that because there was submission made by the executive authority to say, by the speaker to say, no, let's remove Section 4, therefore now we are digitalizing Section 4. Because that means that from what I'm sitting, it becomes shallow in how we are looking at it and we're trying to resolve a situation. The question that I have, what has been the problem? Has this been the problem? Because initially, this was not the problem that was arising on the issue. It only arises in the public when we get the submission from the speaker and the AG. So I'm saying, has it been a problem that affects you? And if it was a problem, you have a report that, like, look, the fact that speaker and this one is there becomes a problem. That's my second question. When you say we look into the issue of the composition, my question becomes, now, Chairman, is this not a government issue now? Because now we're speaking about a political mechanism. Are we in that capacity as much as we put that provision to speak about the composition as far as political mechanism is concerned? The last question that I have, Chairperson, is the issue around the passing of the budget until the oversight has been established. You see, that's an impediment to what the decision you're trying to remedy. The question that I've had is that we are a finance committee. Probably if you want to deal with the section that you submitted in 2009, but you submitted, there was nothing that has to do with us looking into it and following up. We went on and on until somebody wakes up when the court judgment comes to a specific issue and say, no, let's look into this and let's go through this oversight and just have an oversight over these people before they pass the budget. Something that, to me, I still don't find the rationale around it. Up until the point where we are able to say, Chairman, let's have a detail and understanding what has been the problem, if there has been a problem, let us be able to speak from that. And those are our questions, Advocate. Thank you. For my own understanding, my comfortability, well, you know, trying to rush into something because you can see an opportunity, it is problematic. There must be parties that are involved here. Thanks.
Chair, me and you were in part of the 6.29
you look at Shonan, yeah, where the menu, yeah. So chair, and no, we're clear what we're doing. But if you look at the amendment on the concern point number two, which is the presentation on the oversight mechanism, this is the first chair. Now, if you look at that chair, really, it was just a plain this way there. Because the content, it says exactly what has been said on the amendment. There is no change except that it's a lot of oversight mechanism on the amendment, it was the comment. So I really maybe agree on saying let's leave it as is, Chair. Because if we leave it as is, it really makes no harm and it creates no crisis. We've done it 2009 till now, there were no crisis. No, but I'm saying I'm agreeing. That's what I'm saying, I'm agreeing.
Honorable Pandore, your turn. Did I not do before?
You know that you were then in the interrupted.
Okay, no, that's right. Go on. I need to long for the education. I'm very relaxed.
Where the executive is in an environment where they must also overlook
or maybe oversee their own performance, being ready to play at the same time. But what I like about that provision also, it's not saying if we need them at that level, yes, of the mechanism, they can be called in to give account on certain areas. They can be called, you know. So it's not to say we are missing everything by not including them there, you know. But definitely from where I'm sitting, and from a governance perspective, I think there might be issues if they see them in the, as official members and only have to exonerate themselves when issues of the executive are divided on. After all, the budget that we are referring to here is a budget that needs to be expanded by the institution under their leadership. So I think that provision for me is okay for us to leave it as it is, and maybe let's deliberate more on how to get it enforced.
Which under the condition, but now I think if it's
and melt the whole matter of the chemical. If all those things are in fact in place, I think Parliament itself really put the chemical to ensure that. The fact that it was a bad experience. You see, we have not made laws as in any way about it, because no one can own it today. It's an offer. You can go around with the right stadium and full of people and say, who's a project about it? You don't have anyone. It's an offer. It was an offer, and yet this offer was not divided. Now, let's not make rules and pieces of legislation as if about it was surrounded to one. And you must find us free. And never have the opportunity to kind of oppress us again. We must make laws informed by our policy council, but believe in that we have capacity within ourselves to kind of enforce and not just enforce, but to follow the decision that we make as we move on. Now, that's my take on this one. I think, over and above, I accept the general thrust of what members have proposed. But that's a little bit of bilateral is needed on this matter. And I'm talking to my colleagues on the left, all of you. Let's not finalize on this matter, but the general thrust, I think, is fine. There are just one or two things that we need to pick around, except the conditionality that Honorable Yes has proposed. If that is fine, then we can move forward.
Yeah, I think if there are other issues, let's get to know of those so-called sticky issues, or you call them polemic issues.
Yeah, that's what reminds me.
Yeah, no, that's how I got. No, it's fine, Shay. We can also come to continue, because this is also to access whatever information from the advocate before we conclude on this matter.
Is there any other point beyond this? I think this one will find a way to penance me. One of my expertise is penance me.
So, in terms of the way forward with this piece of legislation, we're still leaping on the memorandum from Honorable Harris, but in terms of the legislation, the question you're moving forward on the legislation, to me, if we accept it, it sounded to me that
all right, remember, I think for today, the back was out here.